The Mike Missinelli Show.
Mike Missinelli, 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station. We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole, 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show. Si, senor, we numero uno, and internationally large, just like a sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF, Mikey misses the Philly with Hades the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. All competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock.
Good afternoon, everybody. Mike Missinelli Show, Thursday, following a win and a couple losses. We're going to talk about the win mostly today because this is the thing that's keeping us going as fans, as the Flyers cash in game one. And we'll analyze the game from the drop of the puck on. Now, we're broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio only from Comcast. And so let's talk about last night. The Flyers looked like in the first period that they were dominating the Canadiens. The second period, it reversed. Third period, they took back control. Now, the thing that levels this whole thing off is that when you have a goalie who's not going to let anything in, it really doesn't matter, right? To me, the question that people are asking today is this. These are people that covered the game. The question is there no need to worry? Or did Montreal give them enough of a twirl last night where Flyer fans go, well, they're pretty good. They're going to grind it out like this every game. They're formidable. And I go, no, not when you have a goalie who's consistent like that. That kid was as solid as any goalie that I've seen in a playoff game of the Flyers. He just wasn't going to let anything in. And when they stormed in the second period, and that ice looked like it was tilted, Montreal dominated that second period, and they got some shots on goal, and this kid is just impenetrable. He made a save, I guess it was in the third period. Was a rebound where he just flicked out his right pad. Was that in the third period?
Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable. And you noticed that he was like perfectly in position and unflustered by the whole dynamic in front of him. And he just flicked out that pad. And, you know, when I'm watching the second period, I'm going, this Montreal team must be shaking their head going, Jesus, we're putting this effort in. We're going to have nothing to show for it. You know what that does? It demoralizes a team. So I look at it like there's no need to worry at all about this series. The Canadians are feisty. They don't have the firepower necessary to put enough pucks on this kid where they're going to get many goals. So the Flyers won a routine game last night, as far as I see it. Were they spectacular? No, they weren't spectacular, but they were damn good enough to win a game. And sometimes that's all you need. You're good enough to win a game. You're good enough to take control of the series. You know what happens when you're in first game of the series. The odds are overwhelming that you're going to win this series. And with this goaltender playing the way he's playing, I just can't see this team or many other teams, frankly, beating the Flyers. Hey, I mean, he's I'm watching the game going, they're not going to get one by him. And the one Shea Weber, I mean, you know, obviously that was an open net that he fired into it on a rebound. But, you know, straight up, that kid is calm, man.
Super calm. And he's so young. Today's his 22nd birthday?
Yes.
So calm like that. And people were throwing, not local people, national people were throwing around the name Patrick Waugh because he's always in position. They were saying that Waugh never looked flustered because the save didn't look tough because he was always in position. National people are comparing him already to Patrick Waugh, arguably yes. The greatest goalie to ever play.
And you can look at this and you can give Montreal the benefit of the doubt and say the most beneficial things about him, like they cracked the Flyers' shell of invincibility, or you know they play a style that keeps the Flyers and playing their A game. When you have a goaltender like that, it doesn't really matter. You're going to win more games than you're going to lose, which means you're going to win series. And that's the way I look at it. I absolutely have no worries at all after watching that game last night.
I agree with you. There are some fans that are a little nervous.
I want to hear from those fans that are nervous today because, you know, normally I would push that button right away if I felt nervous, I'm telling you, I'm watching the game. I'm going, this team can't score against him. And if I'm a Montreal fan, I'm like frustrated as hell. And no matter what they tried, they could not score against him. Now, they had a post, and that may have tied the game with 26 seconds left. But other than that, I thought it was a comfortable ride for the Flyers.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the second period, outside of the second period, and I know in the third period, outside of the post hit, they only got six shots.
Yeah.
The Flyers were able to clamp back down.
Yeah, they clamped them back down. And you know, they just stayed on them in that third period. So, we'll talk about it, you Flyer fans. What did you see last night? Do you have an aura of nervousness because they're playing the Canadiens? I just don't see it. So, we'll talk about it. Now, let's talk about a couple other things. The Sixers lose a game last night. It actually benefits them. Because they get a draft pick. They lose the game, Oklahoma City wins, thanks to our old pal Mike Muscala, and they get a draft pick. Now, is that enough for me to not feel bad about this team? No. No. It's not. It's not enough. Because people say, well, Sixers are a reason for optimism. Well, where? What reason for optimism do you see right now? You see, you're usually the most optimistic guy on the planet, Tyrone, with the Sixers. I don't have any reason for optimism.
Well, they're not favored in the series, but Tobias Harris has been his most aggressive self of his entire career so far in the bubble. And Al Horford looks a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to line up how could they win the series, Tobias Harris has to be better than he's been in the past. Horford's going to have to play that great Horford defense and be that veteran guy that he's done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And Embiid will have to take advantage of him the way he did in the regular season when he was playing with two hands.
Okay.
So in that way, if Tobias was playing poorly, if Horford was playing poorly, or I think playing on one leg like he was before, no shot. They have a shot against the Celtics. They're just not favored for a reason.
Yeah, I'm just speaking for me. I don't have any optimism at all. So if you do, maybe you can help me out. You know, I've watched this team. I've seen it. They're not playing with one of their key players. I don't see where they can beat Boston. And I'm not optimistic about it, especially after I read a quote from the coach saying he's confident that Furkan Korkmaz can guard their wings. And I'm going, what's he talking about, chicken wings? Or is he talking about the Celtics? What? Are you kidding me with that? See, that's the kind of thing he goes too far. I love the fact that he likes to pontificate and he likes to give you complete answers and he likes to go to your point and tries to explain himself. But come on, man. You go too far. You should say nothing. You should say, well, we're hoping that we can handle them defensively. It's like something innocuous like that. You don't say that specifically. That guy can't guard anybody.
In the first half, when it was starters versus starters, they had Embiid with the four bench guys in the game. And it was a turnstile to the rim where Embiid had to try to, because that's what they did.
Yeah.
Korkmaz couldn't guard Toronto's wings. How's he going to guard Tatum and Brown? No, those are the guys he's referring to. Or even Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart will take his lunch money over and over again. Didn't take his dinner money, his breakfast money.
Listen, I'm down, man. I'm sorry. And I explained this yesterday. I didn't even need that game last night. I'm down. This whole gig has been blown for me.
Well,
I'm sorry. I'm just down. I'm gutted. The Sixers gutted me.
Well, they had an injury, but you also have to play the series out. What if the Celtics get injured?
Listen, I hope they win.
The Celtics
get
injured.
I'm just telling you that I'm gutted. All right, I had all this optimism coming in this year, and it somebody slashed me and it poured out. I'm sorry. That's why I need the people. Sometimes I need the people. Sometimes I need you.
Yeah, I can't be gutted till they lose.
I'm gutted.
I'm
gutted because I don't have. If they win, I'll be delighted. I'll be surprised. I'll carry on to the next series. I'm just saying, the way I feel now, I just don't. I can't expect anything positive to happen. And I'm sorry that that's the way I feel. But
yeah, I can't.
They pounded me over the head. All right, so the Phillies. Let's get to the Phillies. They lose another game to the. They have a chance to get swept by the Baltimore Orioles. So I don't know. Do I need to say more? I think that's pretty self-explanatory. They did call up Alec Bohm in a measure of desperation, which means, and the manager said he wants to see that whether he can play every day. Well, that means he's either going to play third base or first base every day, which means Segura and Rhys Hoskins will take a seat every now and then. So there's that.
I'm excited about that. I'm always excited when a prospect comes up.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say, though. I like, because even if he does come up and he energizes the offense, you still got to use the likes of... I know he struck out the side last night. But when I bring a guy like Blake Parker in, I'm desperate. Seriously. This dude, he gives you... He's got that shimmy. He's got that thing. And then he... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Siri. And then he unfurls 90. I don't understand it. The Phillies have... is there one guy that throws 95 in that pen? Rosso? Is he the only guy?
From this pen,
From this pen. They got a bunch of guys that hover around 90. Every other bullpen that I see brings in hammers. How is that possible?
How is it possible?
That they you're watching a... Well, I think we'll add Blake Parker. What?
You know, there's synergy here, Mike. For 30 years, we wondered why the Flyers couldn't find a goalie. And the Phillies have not been able to find the Latino, especially, but of any race, flamethrower through their own system in forever. They went and got Wagner when Wagner threw hard, but for the most part, the Phillies have been unable to find anybody who throws hard for 30 years.
I don't understand it. The only guy that they had, like, after Harper was the kid that was a closer for like a half an hour. And he was kind of nuts. Pitched for the Astros, and now he's somewhere else. You know what I'm talking about. Ken Giles. Yeah, Tyler Zuli is in from Natalie. Ken Giles threw hard. That's the last guy.
But
this is my point. If you watch a guy like Blake Parker, how do you not say, nah, I can't use him? You know, that's my problem with the whole thing. That they watch guy, they look at guy like Tommy Hunter, Blake Parker, and they add him. And I go, what are you getting out of? What do you expect to get out of these dudes?
More.
Like it was like last year, they signed another goofy goof who used to run in from the bullpen. What was his name, Tyler?
Was that Philip Hughes? Or Phil Hughes?
That was the one that Real Muto gives him the eye look. I don't think his name is Phil Hughes.
Or not Phil. It was Jared Hughes. I'm sorry.
Jared Hughes, yeah.
Phil Hughes was the Yankee
starter. I call him Goofy Goof. He would come in, you know, big sloppy, like some big sloppy golden doodle. So you're slopping in. Hey, come on, man. Seriously. That's where you got to... Nah, I can't use you. I'm scanning the globe for somebody who throws 95. I can't use you.
But they think spin rate's more important than velocity because their analytics say spin rate.
Spin rate, your sister's keister. 610-632-0975 is how you climb into the Mike Mussinelli Show. It's a Thursday. Brian Westbrook will join us a little later. This is like a Thursday show that we're making into a Friday show because we will be off tomorrow. So take advantage of our presence today. Whatever that's worth. Tyler is in for Natalie. We're back after this.
The Mike Mussinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Well, let's go to the man who covers the Flyers, the Athletic's lead Flyers writer, Charlie O'Connor, joins us. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline. Charlie, I read your story. You were trying to twist my brain like a pretzel.
Well, you have to try to explain everything, and it was a win. You know, you get the win. It's their first series lead since all the way back in 2012, but it wasn't a dominating win. It was a close game.
Yes, and you make great points about why some Flyer fans should worry or shouldn't worry. And here's the thing that erases it for me, because I watched the same game you saw, and I saw the fact that Montreal poured it on in the second period. And the reason why the Flyers survived was this goaltender. And when you have that, I don't think there's any worry at all.
Yeah, if Carter Hart keeps playing as well as he played this entire game, really as well as he's played since they've gotten into the bubble in Toronto, the Flyers are going to go on a run, because you get that kind of goaltending, you know, that kind of ability just to shut down every time Montreal seemed to be around Carter Hart's net, he was just in complete control. And that's the kind of play that, you know, obviously you're stopping the puck, so you're preventing goals from going in, but it builds confidence across the roster. You know, the guys out there, they're willing to take more risks because they can see that the goalie behind them is going to be able to bail them out if maybe they give up a quality chance because they went for a rush down the ice to try to score. So if Carter Hart is this good through the entirety of the playoffs, the Flyers are in great shape. And that to me was the absolute best thing about this game for the Flyers, was just how strong Carter Hart was. He wasn't fazed at all in his first real playoff game.
Yeah. Now you ask a legitimate question, because there are two ways you could look at this. That was their air of invincibility punctured because it wasn't a brilliant game, or was it an example of this team being so good that even if they're not at their best, they just win a playoff game?
Yeah, and I think the next couple games are going to really play into that, because we just got availability with the players up in Toronto, and Shane Gostisbehere made the point that he felt that the Canadiens benefited from the fact that they had actual playoff games, an actual playoff series before this one, whereas the Flyers were just playing round robin games, which were sort of playoff games, but not really. If they lost, it wasn't the end of the world. So he felt that Montreal benefited from kind of having that intensity level a little bit higher than the Flyers did going into this. Now, if the Flyers come out in game two and they're much closer to their best selves, then we can look at it and say, yeah, that's absolutely what it was. You know, the Flyers just needed a little bit of time to get that going. They didn't have their A game. They won anyway. And now they have their A game and they're going to steamroll this team. If they go out in game two and Montreal replicates the second period a couple more times, then you start wondering if this might not be the best matchup for the Flyers. But in the short term, the Flyers did what they had to do. They won game one. They took the series lead against the team they're supposed to beat. And now they only have to win three more games, and Montreal has to win four. So it's hard to be too critical. But at the same time, there was enough there that, you know, you want to see a better performance in games two and three than you saw in game one for the Flyers.
Yeah, and also you put out there that the Canadiens, you know, if you're worried at all, it's because the Canadiens play a style that forces the Flyers to operate at less than full strength, and they can steal a couple games. But Montreal just, to me, doesn't have enough firepower to score 3-4 goals to be able to accomplish that. How do you see that?
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, they're a hardworking team. You got to give them credit. You know, you can see why they're capable of pulling the upset against a team that maybe isn't engaged. And the Pittsburgh Penguins in that play-in round were not engaged. They did not look like they were giving it their all, whether they were or not. They didn't look it, and Montreal took advantage, because this is a team that the Canadiens, they work you to death. You know, they chase down pucks, they create rebounds, but what they don't have is a lot of high-end skill. They don't create a lot of really dangerous chances beyond, you know, rebounds and second chance opportunities. And if you've got a guy like Carter Hart who's shutting them down, you're right. I don't know if they're going to be able to score many goals. And then it just comes down to whether the Flyers, with their superior high-end talent, can create the chances and then finish on the chances that they need to score 2, 3, 4, 5 goals in a game and really take over.
Here's another thing, though. Their best players are going to have to score. And they haven't yet. Drew hasn't, and Hayes hasn't scored in the restart. Now, it was a genius move to get Farabee on that line last night. But is that any cause for concern that the guys that are supposed to score, because there's only so many times that you can rely on everybody else?
I think it's a mild concern. I mean, you obviously want to see those guys, you know, finishing on chances, but you have to trust that they're going to eventually. They obviously have the skill to do it. Giroux hit a post in the second period. I think Couturier's played good two-way play. He just hasn't necessarily been lighting the lamp. His passing's been fine. Jake Voracek is down on line three, so he's not dealing with, you know, the best line mates at the moment, but that's what happens when you got a guy like Joel Farabee and you want him up there because he's playing really well. So do the Flyers need their best scorers to play better? Yeah, I think they do. Maybe they don't necessarily need them to play amazing against this team, but they'll certainly need them if they get past Montreal. They'll certainly need guys like Drew and Couturier and Voracek and Konechny. They're certainly going to need those guys to score a lot if they want to beat the best teams in the East. And I think that's the bigger worry, is that maybe you give them this series to kind of, you know, work the rust off and get going. But assuming they win this series, they better be ready for rounds two and three.
And we're talking to Charlie O'Connor, Cubs Flyers for the Athletic. Now, Charlie, we're looking at this team and seeing like the depth that they have, but how the lineup change for like the Voracek thing is interesting to me because normally he would not be like down with that move to the third line. And Vigneault seems to do that kind of thing to test people. Is that going to be a permanent thing? And how has he reacted to that?
My understanding is, you know, he's reacted okay, but I think what it really boils down to is that, you know, in the round robin games, the Voracek was with, was with Couturier and Giroux for the first two games. The line didn't look that great. Farabee comes up because Voracek doesn't play in the final round robin game. Farabee comes up in that third game against Tampa and looks great. And the top line was the best it had looked throughout the round robin. And the fact of the matter is that you're a head coach. You're not in the business of making mm-hmm. all your top players feel good. You're in the business of winning games. It's the playoffs. And right now, Joel Farabee, quite frankly, is clicking at a higher rate with Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier than Jake Voracek. And if that's the way it is, you got to do it. You got to do what's best for the team. And right now, Farabee up on that top line is best for the team. He had another great game last night. He obviously scored the game-winning goal. And also, having him up on the top line, obviously he's not, maybe from a true talent standpoint, he's not quite the player that Jake Voracek is. But there's a benefit, too, to having a guy like Jake Voracek further down the lineup mm-hmm. because then, he's able to face off against teams' third and fourth lines rather than always have to face off against their top lines. Like, depth in the playoffs is huge in hockey. And I think, having Jake Voracek on the third line, having James Van Riemsdyk on the fourth line, maybe it's not the best thing for those guys and for their numbers, but it certainly could pay dividends from a matchup standpoint just because the Flyers will just out-depth their opponents.
Let's talk about Gosses Bear. It's interesting that he was made available. He's in a precarious spot of being here one day and not the next. Would they dare change it up a little bit, even after a win, and go with Haig instead of Gosses Bear?
Yeah, I'm on the fence about that. I wouldn't rule it out entirely because I do believe the coaching staff sees those guys as close. Obviously, they bring totally different elements to the table, but they see both those guys as useful players. My hunch is that they'll keep the lineup together for game two. They got the win. In the end, they did what they had to do to win. And I don't think Ghost looked terrible. I don't think Ghost was great. I certainly don't think he played as well as he did on Saturday against Tampa, which was the game that essentially earned him his spot back in the lineup. But I don't think he was so poor that you have to rush him out. That said, you lose a game and he doesn't play well. Yeah, Robert Haig absolutely could get back in. Robert Haig was on that third pair through the entirety of that stretch run when the Flyers were one of the best teams in the East. He played two games in the round robin. They think a lot of him and they like that pair with him and Justin Braun. So I would say I think Ghost stays in for game two, but he definitely needs to perform. And let me put it this way. If he has the game he had in game one in game two and the Flyers lose game two, I easily could see Robert Haig back in for game three.
All right, last question is this. Where now, in light of the overtimes grinding up a couple of teams in this conference, how much will that affect what happens as far as the Flyers go? Does it make it easier for them?
It's tough to say. Obviously, Tampa had that five overtime epic a couple days ago. It's hard to say just because the next time they would play, say, a team like Tampa wouldn't be until the conference final, which is quite a ways away. And by then, the fatigue factor might not matter as much. But, yeah, I think it is important for the Flyers, if they're looking to go on a run, to try to take care of business against Montreal as quickly as possible, if for nothing else, because it gives you a chance to lick your wounds. If you have any guys that are playing at 70%, give them 4 or 5 days to recuperate and be ready for the next series. So you don't have to jump right back in if you're playing injured. So I think it's always good to finish series as quickly as possible. And if you're not having to play overtime games and your top competition is having to play overtime games, all the better for you.
All right, Charlie, good stuff. And we shall see what happens. This team is carrying this city right now. So it would be really nice if they could play for a Stanley Cup.
It certainly would. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, man. There's Charlie O'Connor, the Athletic. Good stuff. He's a hockey man. You can tell he's a hockey man.
Yeah, he is.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
4 o'clock hour, Mike Missanelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, the 4 o'clock hour. It's brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop to create jaw-dropping outdoor paradise. Online at LandisBC.com. And they also bring us our regular Friday guests from 4 to 5 every Friday. The great number 36, Brian Westbrook, joins us. Hello, B. West.
Good afternoon, Mike and Miss. How are you?
Doing good. All right, training camp is fully engaged here. I watched Hard Knocks last night. Did you happen to catch it?
No, I didn't catch it. I told my wife we were boycotting HBO just before for the principle. I think I have enough money to pay the extra $15 a month, but I feel like I shouldn't have to pay $200 a month to have HBO and all the other channels. So I'm boycotting. So until I can,
$200, you're getting off cheap.
What? Your cable's more than that?
Yes, it is.
Oh wow!
I got to check this. Maybe I'm getting fleeced.
Mine's more than that.
Yours is more than that, too?
Yeah.
Tyrone? Tyler?
Mine's too.
Wow. All right. Well, Liz, you shouldn't be complaining about two bills.
Maybe it's more than that. Maybe my wife has only told me about 200.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
That's the other side. So, no, I haven't seen it. How was it last night? It's with the Rams, correct?
It's with the Chargers.
Oh, Chargers. That's
yeah.
Right.
It wasn't that good. It's hard to be good.
The Chargers don't have any players that you want to hear from either.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of pandemic stuff, and the Justin Herbert thing is kind of interesting, and kind of fawning over how he's throwing the ball and stuff like that. But I can't imagine it's going to be that good. But let's talk about first of all a couple things that happened. The one thing that affects the Eagles, George Kittle, 5 years, $75 million, kind of sets a price for Ertzy. What do you think about that contract?
Well, I think he deserved it. I think he's a heartbeat of that team. And when you look at what he's able to do, I mean, the difference between him and Ertz, and I still think Ertz is a very good tight end, probably the third best tight end in football, is his ability to block on the end of the line of scrimmage. You know, that separates him from Zach Ertz. I mean, he's a great catch after, run after the catch type of guy. But, for Ertz, what does this mean? That means it's payday. That's what that means. He sets the standard, and Ertz probably wants to come in a little bit less than that. Unfortunately, if you're Philadelphia, you can't pay him. I mean, that's what it is. And I love Zach Ertz, and I know they love him there on the squad, but you can't pay Zach Ertz that type of money when you have Dallas Goedert waiting in the wings. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so we're probably talking about the end of Zach Ertz here, huh?
Well, I mean, no, it doesn't have to be that way. Zach Ertz doesn't have to demand, the third best or second best money. He doesn't have to demand that. If he wants to stay, he can pay for a little bit less than that.
What would you do?
If I'm the third best tight end in the league, I want to get paid like the third best tight end in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how it works. But again, I know his wife is, are here too. And so they may not want to leave. And a lot of other factors go into players and some of their salary demands as well. So, it still depends. It still depends.
All right. Kittle, Travis Kelce also got an extension. 4 year, 57, 2.5. Now, he had 2 years remaining on his contract, right? So, that's 6 years, more years for him? Or does this other contract get ripped up?
The other one gets ripped up. They want to reward him and also get some cap relief because they started the offseason with $170 in cap space. Yet they were able to re-sign the quarterback, the tight end, and a couple at the defensive end.
Wow.
Ironically enough, as much money as they gave Patrick Mahomes, I think in a couple of years they're going to be saying, we got a deal on this kid, especially if he continues to get better at the rate that he continues to play at. I mean, and that's crazy to say, but there may be feeling into year five of that contract that they may have gotten a deal with signing him early and paying him as much money as they're paying him.
All right. I'm kind of left out in the cold here with this Eagles thing. We get like feature stories every now and then, but it's not like you can reach out and touch this kind of a camp. You know, there's going to be a pool reporter. It's just not going to be this. We're not going to learn enough about our team, I don't think.
Yeah, you got to have the end with some of the players. And, you know, this is an easy way for the players to be tight-lipped. I know Andy Reid loves this type of camp because this is how he wanted to run it, where it was just the players and that's it. But it's a little bit different now. And I think that, you know, especially the one thing that we saw from the preseason games that we've had, obviously, every other year, the NFL, was we kind of already knew that some of the vets weren't going to play very much. And we already knew we were going to get from some of the vets. We won't have an idea of who are going to be those other players. Who are going to be those players that we can add, you know, that can help us on special teams, that can help us on offense and defense situations that we wouldn't have known of except for plays in the preseason. And so that's the one thing that we kind of won't get this season, and some of those close inside looks inside the team as well. As we go through without having the preseason games.
Yeah, and it's going to be very strange on how they handle this with the protocol and everything. I don't know what. I'll make you a player in this camp. All right, you got to practice. You mask up. You do all the things that you're supposed to do. After practice, what do you do? Boom. Right back home?
Yeah, if you're a responsible player and you're doing what the protocol calls for, yeah, you're right back home. Now, I'll say this. I think it's easier said than done doing training camp. I mean, I just think that it is, because normally you're in training camp, you're in training camp mode, and in that training camp thought process and mode, it's football all day long. You go home, you call your girlfriend or your wife on the way home, you talk to them on FaceTime, and then you're right back to training camp mode. But then the season comes, and the season mode is a little bit different than training camp mode, because you have a couple of days off, and you know, you have Monday and Tuesday usually off. You have a half day on Friday. You have a half day on Saturday. So you have much more free time. And that's where I think the issues may come into play for some of the players. What am I supposed to do with my free time if I'm not a video game guy? What am I supposed to do with my free time if I don't have a family to worry about? If my family's staying back in our hometown, what do I do at that point? To me, that's where the problems may lay if you find any problems at all.
So what happened in Seattle, Tyron?
What, Tyler, you had the story.
Tyler, what happened in Seattle?
Yeah, so one of their rookies tried to sneak a friend into their area.
Into the hotel room.
With a Seahawks jersey on. Tried to disguise her as a player.
like what they do with the hair.
It was all tucked in. Tucked in under the jersey and everything to look like a player.
He got snagged?
Yes, it's a rookie. He was only and he wasn't a high priority rookie. So you know what they did?
They busted him.
They cut him.
Yeah,
he's up out of there. And now that's a warning to everybody. But yeah, he tried to sneak in a girl, not go to her house or leave. He tried to bring her up in the hotel to his room.
Classic.
And they called him.
Classic.
See, that's a no-no. Whether you're in a quarantine environment or not, that's just a no-no. I mean, we had that same type of rule up in Lehigh, not to bring anyone, not even our family, up to our rooms inside the dorms, and certainly would be the same in this environment. To have friends and family up to your room. If you're an undrafted rookie, you don't have any room to make mistakes, and that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, that's hysterical.
And what did he think with the jersey part? Like, it's one thing, it's better off to try to disguise her as hotel staff. A jersey? No one's going to believe that, even if she's a tall woman.
Here's the other question. Who's telling on him? I mean, if you're a security guard or whoever found this out, are you telling on this guy? Or are you just saying, you know what, man, I understand?
It's on video.
Oh, okay.
See, they got all these guys.
They're reviewing all the video.
All the teams that are currently in the hotels, the NFL, it's mandatory that they have a security officer looking over. And the security officer is supposed to be neutral. He's not supposed to be a team employee. He's supposed to be an NFL employee.
Yeah, that's bad.
So,
wow.
You know,
that's amazing.
I think at the link, I don't think anybody tried to bring a girl up into the. There is a NFL security guy there doing the same thing. It's just, what are the odds that somebody tries to bring a girl to the weight room?
Let me ask you a couple questions about. We go through, there's four teams that have interesting decision to make a quarterback. And so let's go down a list and see how you feel about each one of these. Let's first start in New England. Does Cam start, or do they go with Stidham?
Well, it's been my belief that you don't bring in an ex-MVP a guy that is super talented, obviously Heisman winner, number one draft pick overall, to be your backup to a guy that has really never played an entire season in the season, I mean, in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if I'm Jared Stidham, as soon as they said or mentioned Cam Newton coming in, I already knew what the deal was. I'm the second string. So, in my mind, there's no question, unless Cam just goes out there and refuses to learn an offense. Other than that, the Cam, of course, is going to be your starting quarterback because he gives him the best chance to win. And no matter what Bill Belichick says, he wants the best chance to win. If that means taking a player, Randy Moss, if that means taking a player that you don't think could necessarily fit your team or your offense, Corey Dillon or Chad Johnson, then they'll take him. And they have to try to find a way to make him fit. And I think they'll do the same thing with Cam Newton.
All right, let's go to Miami. Tua or Fitz?
You know, so Brian Flores, the old New England coach who's now the coach down there in Miami, he had that team playing hard all season long. They gave, you know, obviously they beat New England at the end of the season last year in that last game, and that hurt New England as far as, you know, getting the bye and things like that in the playoffs. And I just think he plays to win. And when you go into camp, and I have to believe with Tua being healthy that he can win out that job, especially with the eyes of that franchise on him. If they can protect him, then he should be able to play. The hard problem is that they've had a couple of wide receivers, which is an important position for a quarterback, opt out and say that they don't want to play this season. So some of their faster guys have opted out, and now they have probably guys like Mac Hollins starting. And, you know, that wasn't what Tua was signing up for when he went to Miami and got drafted there and probably thinking about it in the offseason. But I still think you go with Tua, the young talent. He's going to be the face of the franchise. I start him right away.
All right, let's go to Chicago, where our old pal, Nicky, is in a battle with Trubisky. Who starts?
I got to go with Nick Foles. I don't know. You know, I think talent-wise, Trubisky's probably a little bit better, you know, and he's younger, but he's so unreliable. He's so up and down. I would go with Nick Foles. I'm a big believer in the old reliable veteran, at least to start you out. And let's say Nick Foles can't get it done, then you can always go back to Trubisky. But I just can't see, again, why would you bring a guy like Nick Foles in if you weren't going to at least give him a chance to start? And I think he wins that position if he has that opportunity. And plus, he knows Matt Nagy very well. And so they've been around each other for a few years. And so, you know, I think Matt Nagy knows exactly what he's getting out of Nick Foles. And that kind of gives him just a bit of an edge in my mind.
All right, last team, the Washington Football Club. Haskins, Kyle Allen, or maybe a miracle comeback from Alex Smith?
I think you go Haskins. I mean, he should be your first option. He played, you know, some decent games last year. He just wasn't very good. And I don't know that coaching staff helped him at all. And the environment in Washington has been very bad for a long time. And I have to think that Ron Rivera brings in a different type of offense and thought process where you're not putting as much pressure on the quarterback. And you're saying, okay, we're going to run the ball and play some defense. And if our quarterback can make a play from time to time, we're going to allow him to do that. And with that, I think Haskins has the ability to flourish because he doesn't have the pressure of going out and winning games. The other part about Washington last year is that defensively, they just couldn't stop anybody, even though they had some good players. And I think they got even better with a guy like Chase Young. They have to come a long way defensively so that their offense isn't fighting that uphill battle week in and week out.
All right. This would be a good time now to tell you about that. We had an amazing drop of food here today. Our good friends at Dietz and Watson and Bria and Latella's Italian American Deli in Havertown, PA, brought us some sandwiches. Their family-owned Bria and Latella's Italian American Deli and Kitchen in Havertown, PA, serves up some of the most delicious sandwiches in Delaware County. Try one of their signature sandwiches, like the Junior. Now, Junior's made with Dietz and Watson Genoa salami, capicola, imported ham, pepperoni, and cheese, served on fresh Sarcone's bread. Now, Tyler, did you have one of those?
I had one of the turkey ones.
Oh, yeah, turkey. Yeah. You don't have a Junior?
I did not. I wasn't sure what it was until I read the read.
Really? Now, the reason I bring this up now is because I got my dog in here. My dog is in the studio today.
Nice.
I had some cleaning people come in, so I had to take her in the studio because I forgot that she goes to daycare on Thursdays. So I brought her in. So I got a half-eaten chicken salad sandwich in here. Uh-huh. Yeah, this dog is climbing up on me for the last 10 minutes. Nice. Climbing up, so I'm getting distracted. So I got to handle this right here. Hold on a second. I got to get her a piece of this chicken salad.
There you go.
Are you going to give her a piece, huh? Are you a table food type of dog person? Like, you like to give them table food from time to time?
I can't resist her. Mm. Now, she eats her own food. It's not like I spoiled her with table food. But right. If I'm sitting around eating, she'll hop up with the little paws on the chair. I want a little morsel. Yeah, so Mike, she's doing that right now.
Mike's a real softy with this dog.
Yeah, she's got the scent.
I believe that.
She got the sandwich scent. So, like, she's relentless right now. So let me move it on to the Flyers. Okay. I know you were paying attention to every drop of the puck last night, right?
Of course. I went back and watched it again this morning. I was so excited.
Can I actually talk some Flyer hockey with you?
Yeah, let's do it. If you want a real answer, then you know the answer to that.
You got to get on board. The squad may win a Stanley Cup, Ryan, from your old professional hometown team.
I'm excited for the Flyers. I really, really am. It's been really hard for me. And listen, I've been kind of in the analyst profession for mm-hmm. a little bit here. And it's just been so hard for me to get into hockey. I mean, almost impossible.
This is interesting. Now, tell me why. Because you grew up in Washington, D.C. area. The Capitals, yes. A very popular team down there.
Yes,
and
they are.
And they never moved you, huh?
Nope. I think probably part of the reason, and this is probably the reason why in a lot of minority communities, you know, you don't have access to ice time. You rarely ever have anyone in your community that teaches you hockey. And so for you to get excited about the game is just, it's almost impossible. And that probably has carried me through my entire life just because I haven't been exposed to it in that mm-hmm. way. I've been to maybe a couple of games here and there, but it just didn't catch me. I'll tell you this, though. When I did go to the game, I went with my wife, and just trying to learn the strategy of it and, you know, the power play, things like that, that was kind of fun. That was interesting, uh-huh. but I just couldn't get into it.
But it hasn't pulled you in yet. It
hasn't pulled me in, no.
All right. Well, then we'll bypass the Flyer analysis. Let's move on to the Sixers.
That's all right.
What am I going to do? Am I going to press him to the wall here?
No. I wasn't talking about you. Brian's a violation.
He was honest. He was honest about it. I'll give him that.
He was.
Am I supposed to know about the Flyers hockey team right now? Really?
Yes.
And the Caps come on,
Mikey Miss every Friday from 4 to 5. They won last night during the Stanley Cup playoffs. B. West, you got to take one for the hockey squad.
The next, I guarantee the next game I'm going to watch.
Tomorrow afternoon. 3 o'clock.
I'm free tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. I'm going to be watching. And I'm going to be tweeting about the game tomorrow afternoon. How about that?
Bring the horses in early. Nestle in. Watch some hockey.
That's right. I'm there.
All right. Let's talk Sixers. The 8 games is all decided. They're going to play the Boston Celtics. I frankly didn't think that was going to happen. I thought they were going to be able to pass Indiana, but they haven't. Circumstances have caused that. It looks like no Ben Simmons for at least the first round, maybe not even the second round. And when all is said and done here, this team going into the playoffs, what's your feel?
Well, you know, obviously it's disappointing not having Ben. You know, to win in the NBA, you have to have two plus stars, right? You have to have the ability to have two plus stars, and you got to have that third guy that can go get you 20 points. And he may not be a star, but he can get you 20 points in a decent way pretty much every night during the playoffs. And right now, without Ben, it seems like it's going to be hard for that to happen for the Sixers. And the truth is, in his current position, which is the fourth spot, I thought it was going to be hard for them to win in that first round anyway, especially with the shakeup.
Against Miami, you thought it would be hard.
Well, I thought it would be hard for them to win in the first round of the playoffs, no matter who mm-hmm. they played, mm-hmm. if they had been playing the four. Only okay. because he's not used to
the
position.
Like that.
And I just didn't love that move there at this time of the season. So, you know, I think it's going to be tough. But listen, Joel Embiid can go off for, you know, 35, 40 a night. I think they can be in a game. They're going to have to play defense like they've never played defense before. And it's going to be an up and down, relentless basketball game. The question is, can you find a way to slow down Jason Tatum every single night? And that's going to be hard for the Sixers to do.
Yes. So when we look at, first of all, are you in favor of breaking the Ben Embiid thing up? You wanted to trade Ben? You've seen enough?
Well, I think it's a bad fit for those two. Big man, you have to have a shooter or a scorer, you know, that's going to control the ball. Ben controls the ball, and he just doesn't shoot well enough. That's going to be a fatal flaw with a big man. Now, if you want to break him up, which I would have suggested a couple of years ago in my mind, you got to find someone that can, you know, score. Here it is, Mike, and I think I might have heard you say it the other day. That's where the Markelle Fultz hurts you the most.
Yep.
Because when coming out of college, that's what he was, a guy that can dominate the ball, get to the basket, create for himself, and shoot. You don't have that guy anymore. And the guy that you drafted to be that guy doesn't even play on the doggone team anymore. So that's kind of where it hurts. Yeah. But yeah, I think they're a man short in this series, unfortunately.
Yeah, all right. We're going to continue this conversation about Ben because I want to probe.
You want Ben here. You think Ben has potential to get better.
First of all, there's no way that you get a player good enough in return for Ben Simmons. Because the only two players I would trade him for are Luka Doncic and Booker. And those teams aren't going to give up those players for Ben Simmons. Otherwise, you're not getting the value and you're defeating your whole purpose. So in my mind, it's better to go 1 and maybe 2 years more to see if you can make this thing work rather than try to hurt yourself.
We'll talk about it.
We'll take a break. 610-632-0975. Mike Mastelli Show. Brian Westbrook with us till 5. Back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.